poet Matthew Dickman, in words you heard earlier, imagines grief as a purple gorilla who likes Willie Nelson, misses Texas, and hums a little. For poet Barbara Crooker, in words you heard earlier, grief is like a river you wade in, with flat rocks, shallows, October sunlight, and numbing cold. Denise Levertov pictures grief as a dog one coaxes out from under the porch and into the comfort of the house. For Mark Doty, grief is like white roses on the beach, only a little denser than fog. And Kevin Young imagines grief as a tide, taking a lost loved one away and then back again. How is it for you? In your heart, in your soul, in your life, what's grief like? Casting about for some image, some metaphor, some way to put that feeling into words or pictures, what comes to mind? Dickman's gorilla, Crooker's river, Levertov's dog, each is a vibrant image. But I gravitate more toward Doty's beach roses, shadow-centered petals, blurring toward the edges, into everything, beside the foaming hymn of shore, brave waxen candles. And to Kevin Young's tide, rising and falling with presence, absence, presence, absence. In my first semester in college, while playfully kicking a soccer ball with some kids who had wandered onto a field near my dorm, I slipped and gouged a sizable chunk out of my left leg on a broken bottle carelessly thrown onto the field. It opened a gaping, gushing wound, one crudely closed by an emergency room doctor's deft stitching. To this day, decades later, it remains tender. A scarred indention that when hit still shivers me with pain. Grief, by my way of it, is like that. Grief is tender, delicate, never hardened, even old grief, even the grief of many years. Grief may in time scab and scar over, but it remains even yet so prone to pain. Some wayward blow, some even nudging glance, and the old hurt flares up all over again. Try as we might to guard against such jolts, grief seems so vulnerable, so exposed. Perhaps in part it is thinking of grief as tender fragility that causes me also to imagine it as a young child. Less an infant than a somewhat unruly toddler, wandering about with that unsteady gait into all kinds of problematic situations. Grief is prone to showing up unexpectedly, acting out, calling attention to itself, like it or not. My beloved friend of many years, who was to have been my friend well into our old age, instead, at the end of the slow unraveling of his mind, died. He drifted and drifted ever further away until he was caught in a current and carried under forever. In his place, his no one to take his place in my life place, I felt such a weary, resigned sadness. I did not want it, this grief. I was tired and angry and busy, and I just wanted the grief to go away and stay away. So I avoided it, set out no trespassing signs around my heart, and plunged back into my days, determined that that was that. Only it wasn't. And it isn't. Instead, that clumsy, cumbersome grief showed up and shows up still, unbidden, summoned back by the most prosaic of small senses. You know how a smell, a certain simple smell, can send us tumbling? A whiff of, well, in my beloved's case, of scotch. That peaty, sharp, whiskey aroma. Or a few bars of a jazz riff, music to which I introduced him and which he grew to love. Or an old vignette shaken loose of a particular run, of a particular meal, that special night in Napa, followed the next morning by Beethoven on the long drive to Yosemite. And there it is. That grief, as tender as an old wound, hobbling and humbling me all over again. I have discovered what I should have known, what many of you here know all too well, resisting, avoiding grief never really works. Grief, like a rambunctious child, wanders at will into serene and orderly settings, refusing to be ignored. It shows up uninvited and seems completely unconcerned with any disruption that it may cause. Dickman's purple gorilla, who appears again one night, putting her heavy purple arms around us. Crooker's numbing river, where we find ourselves again, stuck in the middle, water parting around our ankles. And what are we to do? What are we to do? It has only lately occurred to me that those poignant poets may be on to something, on to a kind of truth better told in verse than in prose, far more art than science. What if we were to imagine that grief is not some ominous force lurking in the shadows of our lives, but rather a necessary, dare I say, welcomed part of what it means to be alive? What if grief shows up not to undermine or overwhelm us, but to remind us? To remember us to the life of one we loved and only thought we'd lost completely? What if grief's unruly arrival signals to us that love's truest bonds aren't ever really severed, not even by death? What if grief's tender fragility can serve to remind us that grief and loss are not the same thing? That grief may even be loss's counterweight. The reminder that the life we lose, even in death, lives on within us. If we could imagine grief, gorilla, river, rose, or child as a gift, then we might even welcome it, make a place for it, nurture and care for it. We might take this tender gift into our arms, hold it closely against our breast, offering it solace, sanctuary. Come, grief. Make your home in my heart. Speak to me of what is yet to be cherished. Sing in my heart of compassion's stirrings. Bring with you grief sights, sounds, smells, memories of plenty. Make real again his voice. His laugh, his smile, his touch. Mend the frayed strands. Weave them ever more tightly into my life. My arms, my home, my heart opens to you, grief. No longer are you intruder, trespasser. May you now be welcomed, honored guest. For you, grief, you come bearing the beloved. Back once more like a tide forever lured by lunar seduction. Let us go then on our way, grief, you and me together. No longer in enmity, but in love. Welcome. Come in, grief. Make of my heart, my tender, fragile, wounded heart. Make of my heart your home.